Welcome to Night Sky Tourist, a place to learn the night sky, have fun with its ancient stories, meet astronomers and dark sky advocates, and fall in love with the dark. I'm Vicki Dirksen, your host and author of the website and blog, nightskytourist.com. If you've never visited the website, I invite you to stop by after the podcast. Check out some of the great blog articles, browse through the resource page, and sign up for the newsletters. The newsletters have great content that is exclusive for subscribers. Are you ready for an adventure under the night sky? Let's jump right in. Have you ever driven across the entire length of Texas? I did once, and it took 2 days to do it. Okay, you can actually cross it in one day, but I started my first day in Phoenix, Arizona. It's 880 miles from the border of New Mexico to the border of Louisiana along Interstate 10. And Texas has three of America's 10 largest cities, Houston, San Antonio, and Dallas. But if you look at a light pollution map of Texas, you'll see that the southwestern part of the state has a belt of pristine dark skies. When you combine the lack of light pollution with the arid climate, you end up with some of the best skies for stargazing. Big Bend National Park noticed this treasure of starry skies, and they earned certification as an International Dark Sky Park in 2012. My guest is Jason Gablaski, the lead dark sky ranger at Big Bend National Park. He grew up in Massachusetts, and he's been working for the National Park Service since 2010. And since then, he has worked at 10 different national parks. Jason has led astronomy programs, and he monitors light pollution at multiple parks, including Big Bend, Death Valley, Everglades, Acadia, and Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument. He's passionate about teaching people about the night sky, the harmful effects of light pollution, and what people can do at home. Please join me in welcoming to the podcast, Jason Gablaski. Jason, thank you for joining me on the Night Sky Tours podcast from Texas, all the way from Big Bend National Park. Welcome.
Oh, welcome. It's a pleasure to be here.
So I've just mentioned you're in Texas, but for people who haven't heard of Big Bend, tell us where it is, and also tell us what makes it a national park. Why is it a national park?
So we're in the remote southwestern corner of Texas, where right along the border, right along the Rio Grande, where the Rio Grande River bends back up. That's where we are, right in that saddle. And we're a pretty massive national park. We're over 800,000 acres. And we're pretty unique in that we protect the largest swath of Chihuahuan Desert. We also have a lot of different ecosystems. We've identified the most bird species out of any national park, as well as we have the spectacular night skies out here. And there's so much more than that in terms of history and culture, and highly recommend you come out and see us.
So I think in that part of Texas, you guys have a lot of bird migration that goes through there every year, don't you?
We do. We have a ton of bird migrations. We're kind of on the intersect between we get species from the western part of the United States, as well as the eastern part of the United States, as well as the north and the south.
Yeah, I know that Houston, especially, but I think some of the other areas in Texas, the big cities actually participate in kind of like a lights out program during the high bird migration seasons each year. So I think that's pretty cool. The birds get confused by the artificial light below, thinking that it's the stars above. So it's really cool.
Yeah,
like starting to do that.
The species they found out that birds use the stars is the indigo bunting, and we do occasionally get them here, which is kind of cool to tie that in.
What sparked the idea to become an international dark sky park?
Big Bend National Park, as well as places like Death Valley National Park, we were some of the first in the National Park Service. And we just saw a major need for it, for spreading awareness, because there was a lot of light pollution getting farther and farther west from the eastern part of the state of Texas. Luckily, we don't really get that out here because we got ahead of the game in advertising. And then just recently, because we got our designation in 2012, but just within the last year, we got designated an International Dark Sky Reserve, along with all the parks of the area, the McDonald Observatory. We work closely with them for not just within the park, but the whole region.
That's fantastic. I missed that news somewhere along the way. That's amazing.
Yeah,
Congratulations
so
for that.
we work closely with, like, I'm on phone calls with the McDonald Observatory every 3 months. We're monitoring everything in this park, and got to give a shout out to Big Bend Ranch State Park. They're also an International Dark Sky Park, but they're within that sanctuary, as well as Black Gap Wildlife Management Area, which is an International Dark Sky Sanctuary. It's pretty impressive, as well as a lot of the communities like Alpine, Marfa, all the surrounding communities want to be in on it as well, because that equals astrotourism.
Yeah, and astrotourism, that's kind of what Night Sky Tourist is all about. It's introducing people to amazing places they can go where they can have an amazing time during the daytime, but then see the stars in a way that they just probably can't see where they live. So that's amazing that you're doing the astrotourism. I'm curious to know if you guys had any challenges on the way of getting your designation, because obviously as a national park, you're going to need some exterior lighting for when your visitors are there. What did you have any challenges that you faced?
We did have challenges, and we still have challenges. Because with a dark sky designation, it's just continuum. You have to constantly upkeep it. Right now, we're going to be building a new lodge. So, with that new, because the foundation's just shot, honestly. So, we have to build a new one. And with that new lodge being built, we're going to even have even better lighting in there. We're looking at things like the warm wavelength versus the blue LEDs. We obviously want to get to the warmer wavelengths. We're looking at trying to get the lights down to like 2000 Kelvin. Like 26 is the on the edge, but we want to get a little bit lower than that to stay ahead of the game. And looking at things like that, as well as timers on the lights, putting in shading for in windows to keep interior lighting from going into the exterior, things like that.
That's amazing to be able to think ahead as you're getting ready to build. And we live in a day where the issue of light pollution is becoming more and more well known. Even the Smithsonian has a brand new exhibit about lights out. And so I think as more people learn about this, I am hoping that people start to become more proactive about stuff like that. So it's great that the national parks can be a role model in that. So thank you
And that's
for doing that.
where I get into. We're such a great dark sky park here, but we have a lot of other parks in the National Park Service, like the Everglades, Big Cypress National Preserve, which is a dark sky park. Those parks are great, just like the one here, where we get people coming from the city and they get to see the Milky Way for the first time. And that is just such an impact for people.
Right, because over 80% of people can't see the Milky Way from where they live. That's a huge number. I mean, that means that there are going to be people who live their entire lives and never see it, which is sad. Yeah, that's great. So it's like a natural resource that you guys are protecting there.
It is, and we do consider it a resource. The National Park Service, we have an entire division for the entire agency dedicated to natural sounds and night skies. And it ties in very closely into things like wilderness designations and our backcountry. It's just so crucially important. It's something that people want to come to these places to see, and we don't want that to disappear.
What kind of night sky experiences do you offer your guests at the park? Do you have activities and events?
Yeah, we do night sky programs. We set up telescopes for people to look at different things. We tend to do it more in the winter. We try to do stuff in the summer. But it's, as people know, it's pretty hot right now. Even at 11 o'clock at night, it's over 100 degrees. But we do it throughout the winter. Typically, we try to do programs Friday, Saturdays. We also have the special filters to put on telescopes to look at the sun for solar viewing, because right now we're getting close to a high level for in terms of the sunspot cycle. There's a lot of sunspots on the sun right now.
Yeah, and so that also means that higher cycle, it's a good time to go to those northern countries to see the northern lights.
It's gotten so good. Like last month, the aurora made it down to Death Valley, and people with their cameras could even take pictures in parts of Texas.
That's crazy. I
I'm
love that.
major
That's so
soldier.
cool. I grew up in northern Idaho and I remember seeing the northern lights a few times when I was a kid. And now I'm in Arizona. I guess that they've been visible here a couple of times, but I've always been asleep. So haven't been able to see them here.
I used to work in Alaska, so I've seen them plenty of times up at places up
Oh.
in
Where did
Denali.
you work in Alaska? A national park?
Yep, Denali National Park and Preserve, Glacier Bay National Park and Preserve, and Bering-Lambridge National Preserve.
Wow.
All excellent parks as well.
What a great experience. I think the tricky thing for Alaska, I know we're talking about Texas, but you brought up Alaska. I think the tricky thing for stargazing in Alaska has got to be that when in the summertime, it doesn't get dark enough to see the stars. And so to see the stars, the best is going to be in the wintertime when you're freezing your rear end off.
I always tell people that it might be darker up in parts of Alaska because they don't have much in terms of major cities. But for down here in the lower 48, these are the best night skies I've ever seen are here at Big Bend National Park, especially right now. Literally this week in July is perfect to see the galactic center, the galactic core of our galaxy in the Milky Way. And we have no light pollution here that will alter your vision of it. It is spectacular.
Yeah, it is a great time of the year for stargazing. Yeah, just make sure you hydrate. Hydrate really
Yep,
well.
absolutely.
So your park has a really rich cultural history that goes back, what, like 10,000 years, I think.
Yeah, we go about 10,000 years back to like the paleo era.
So does your park have any knowledge of or share any information about the cultural astronomy of the people who've lived there long, long ago?
We don't, and the reason we don't is because, like, as example, I'll talk about the cultures we do have here in the heritage here. It's the Chisos, the Apache, as well as the Comanche for more for that have their heritage here for versus traveling, hunting, farming, things like that for those three cultures. We don't have permission to give their stories, and we also feel as a matter of respect, it's their stories to give. It's their identity, it's their heritage. If they ever gave us permission, we would love to, but it is their stories. And we do absolutely respect that.
And I am so grateful that you do. This is something that I've had to learn over the last couple of years because cultural astronomy is so fascinating to me. And I love getting my hands on books or watching videos where they share their knowledge and things like that. And I've had to come to the understanding that those don't belong to me to tell, unless, like you said, unless they give permission.
I think the amazing thing about it is, I mean, obviously the Greeks and the Romans, they take up a lot of this stuff because of the International Astronomical Union using those names for official constellations. But there's just so much cultures around the same exact stars showing that the stars are truly universal.
Yes. Do you guys ever have any people from these different tribes come in and share their stories?
We have not yet. I've only been here for about a year. And it's something I would love to see. We're trying to capture as a park, we're trying to capture those stories that haven't been told. And those are definitely some of them. So we have been trying to reach out to different groups, as well as other stories. Like there's just across the river, we have a lot of Mexican culture over there. And they have a lot of different stories in history that's aside from astronomy that we're trying to grasp and see if we can respectfully share those stories as well.
You know, it's interesting how, I kind of, for most of my adult life, thought in terms of there's science and then there's mythology. But one of the things that I've learned in recent years is, and I've heard some people from different tribes use this phrase, and I think it's so cool, and they call it two-eyed seeing, where you can see the science side, but you also have the cultural side, and that they have a beautiful way of bringing them together. So I would love to see more of that stuff. So tell me about people visiting your park during the day. What kind of things can people do or see when they come to your park?
Well, there's so much to see. So a lot of our visitation happens between, I'd say, October to April. And a lot of people are going out hiking A lot of our hiking trails are up in the Chisos Mountains, so one of those sky islands. We have a lot of backcountry roads that people can drive on with their jeeps, and they're going backcountry camping to go stargazing and things like that, as well as river trips going through the canyons. And there's just so much opportunities, and I highly recommend it. And also wildlife viewing, bird watching, and we've gotten just this week, like we were saying, astrotourism. We have a lot of people trying to do astrophotography right now to get that picture of that galactic center over the Chisos Mountains. It's fun to watch and see people just coming here for the first time or coming here. We've had families come here for over 40 years. This is their spot.
I think that a lot of people who haven't been to Texas imagine Texas as being completely flat from one end to the other.
And it feels like it in some parts of Texas, but there's also the Hill Country over near Lyndon B. Johnson National Historical Park, which is also a dark sky park. But out here, it's desert, it's mountainous, it's a lot of like almost like basin and range type feel. It feels like another planet sometimes. Sometimes you feel like you're a little bit on Mars with some of the plants. We have all those Ocotillo and all that, same in Arizona.
So tell us how people can learn more about the park and find more educational materials if they want to plan a trip there.
Oh, it's going to be our park website. So it's going to be www.nps for National Park Service .gov/BIBE for Big Bend National Park. That's the best spot to go, is definitely our park website. We also have social media. We're on Instagram and Facebook. If people are interested in seeing photos that we post and different things that are happening in the park, definitely follow and subscribe to us.
I'll put the link to that in the show notes so that people can just easily scroll down and click on it. And that way they can come over and check out all the stuff that you've got there. Jason, thank you so much for joining us on this episode. And I hope that people put this on their list of places to visit. I think it's fun to check out the national parks. And I'm always excited to hear about people who have checked a whole lot of them off their list.
Yeah, we're definitely out there, but we are absolutely worth the drive. Just plan ahead before you come out into a remote place like this.
Thank you.
No problem. Thank you.
Do you have plans to visit Washington, D.C. this year? If so, be sure to visit the Smithsonian exhibit called Lights Out. This exhibit will take you into the world of light pollution and the impact it has on all life on Earth. You can discover why dark nights matter through interactive experiences, over 100 photographs, nearly 250 objects, and a theater program. It also walks you through easy steps for reducing your contribution to light pollution, through things as easy as shielding your exterior lights and choosing a warmer color temperature, just to name a few. I've been excited about this exhibit because it features my town, Fountain Hills, Arizona, as one of the world's dozens of certified dark sky communities. You can find a link for this exhibit in the show notes or by visiting nightskytourist.com/70. It's time for our night sky tour for mid-July 2023. Pause the podcast, turn off all the lights, and I'll meet you outside under the stars. Tonight, we're going to identify the Summer Triangle. No, it's not a constellation. The Summer Triangle is formed by connecting three bright stars in three different constellations. And once you find it, you can see the Milky Way stretched across it if you are under dark skies. Remember, you can always use the stargazing app to help you if you're having trouble identifying the stars on your own, but make sure you turn down the screen brightness and put your phone on night mode before you get started, and that way you don't blow up your night vision. The first bright star you're going to look for is called Deneb, and it's in the constellation Cygnus. Cygnus is a swan in Greek mythology, and it's not difficult to imagine the stars looking like a swan that's in flight with its neck stretched out in front of it. Some people like to call it the Northern Cross because it resembles a cross, too. If you are under really dark skies, Cygnus will look like it's swimming in a river, which lends to its story in Greek mythology. But what looks like a river is actually the Milky Way. Deneb is the bright star at the tail of the swan. The next bright star is to the southwest of Deneb. It's the star Vega in the constellation Lyra. Now, if you're an Ed Sheeran fan, Lyra is the name of his first daughter, and his second daughter's name is Jupiter. Can you tell that Ed is a fan of the night sky? The musical superstar even built an observatory in his own backyard in England. But back to Lyra, the constellation. It's a small constellation and is shaped like a rhombus with a tiny triangle attached to one point. A lot of the ancient drawings of it depicted it as a vulture or an eagle carrying a lyre. In Greek mythology, the lyre belonged to Orpheus, and it made such beautiful music that even rocks could be charmed by it. The brightest star in this constellation is Vega, and it's the second brightest star in the northern celestial hemisphere, and the fifth brightest star in the entire night sky. This might surprise you, but Vega used to be our north star. Because the Earth wobbles as it spins on its axis, the sky shifts over time. And I mean over a really long period of time. It takes about 26,000 years to make one complete wobble. When was Vega the North Star? Oh, almost 14,000 years ago. But it's going to be the North Star again in another 13,000 or so years. You can check out my blog post that I've written about how the Earth wobbles with a drunken stagger. Just check out the show notes for a link to it. So take a look at how far our north celestial pole has shifted over the past 14,000 years. And we're going to do that by looking for Polaris, the North Star today. Find the Big Dipper, and then use the two stars of the outer edge of the pot for pointers. You're going to take that distance between these two stars and then extend it out about five times that length to find Polaris, our North Star today. If you're unsure, go ahead and use your stargazing app to confirm Polaris. And then once you do, go back and find Vega to see how far our celestial pole has wobbled since Vega marked the north for us. Okay, the third star that makes up the summer triangle is Altair in the constellation Aquila. Aquila is another bird, and its name means eagle in the Latin language. In Greek mythology, Aquila is the eagle that carried Zeus's lightning bolts, and in Roman mythology, it was Jupiter's lightning bolts. Its brightest star, Altair, is the 12th brightest in the entire night sky. So by connecting Deneb, Vega, and Altair, you can form an isosceles triangle, and the Milky Way flows right across the entire thing. So if you're trying to view the Milky Way and you're not really sure if that's what you're looking at, find the summer triangle, and that will help to confirm whether or not that streak of light that you're seeing is the Milky Way or just a streak of high clouds. You can find links to everything mentioned in this episode in the show notes or visit nightskytourist.com/70. That's nightskytourist.com/70. Thank you for joining me for another episode of the Night Sky Tourist Podcast. If you enjoy the Night Sky Tourist Podcast, please show your support by subscribing to it in your podcatcher and leave a written review. Your reviews are really important to me and they help others discover the podcast. Be sure to visit nightskytourist.com for great articles and resources. And while you're there, sign up for the newsletter for exclusive content. We'll see you here again in 2 weeks. Until then, keep looking up.